Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you are listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. Conversations is a collaboration between KWBU and Creative Waco, where we hear from leaders in our community who are cultivating the creative and cultural life of Waco. I serve as a director of marketing and communications at Creative Waco. We're a local arts agency, and we exist basically to grow and support the artistic and cultural identity of our city. Later in this episode, you'll hear a segment called David in Art with David Smith. Today, we're chatting with conductor Stephen Hyde about his role with the Baylor Symphony Orchestra, as well as the Waco Symphony. But before we get to Stephen, Creative Waco Executive Director Fiona Bond is here to chat with us. Fiona, thanks for joining.
Hi, Ray.
So for anybody who may not be familiar, today we'll be talking about the Art Apprenticeship Program and the mural that our interns have been working on over the summer. Fiona, can you start off with a brief description of what Art Apprenticeship is?
Yes, and people may have heard on the show, we've actually talked about Art Apprenticeship before, but we have a very cool way that we want to engage the local community, which is kind of why we're talking about it again.
Sure.
But Art Apprenticeship was, it was a pilot this year. It was it's designed as a work experience or apprenticeship program. This year it was for a group of 10 high school students, rising seniors from Waco ISD. And it gives them a chance to be involved in a concept to completion process within the arts. And so we had a team of four professional artists working alongside these students, teaching them everything about the business of being a professional, a creative professional. So they learned everything from how to cover work safety on a job site through to how to present an artistic concept to a client. And then they had the very cool experience of painting a really amazing mural, which is on the side of what was a newly refurbished building owned by Turner Berenger. And people can see it as they approach downtown on University Parks. It's right there on Jackson and 2nd. And looks absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So does the finished product meet your expectations of what the first Art Apprenticeship mural would look like?
You know, honestly, I don't know quite what our expectations were,
sure,
except that we had seen some really amazing murals in Cincinnati on an intercity visit with the Chamber of Commerce. And when we were originally talking with the partners on this project, you know, with Waco ISD and with Prosper Waco, we used that as the model. And I have to say, wow, the final product definitely exceeded our expectations.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's incredible. I don't think that people would suspect the group of high school students worked on that mural if they, you know, just walked up to it off the street.
Absolutely.
So the design features origami cranes that are transforming into a more lifelike crane. Can you talk about that concept and why we chose
mm-hmm.
that?
And the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
That was taken very much from the brief that was given by Turner Berenger, by Shane Turner, who was our main liaison on that. And so it was very client-centered. And what he wanted was something that was very aspirational for our community and kind of told the story of how Waco is taking flight at this point in time. And so the cranes, the kids loved the concept of the cranes because they were seen as culturally significant. The crane is kind of an iconic symbol in multiple different cultures that are important to Waco's culture. So the other aspect of that they really liked was the process of origami, which is a very ancient artistic process that has been taught literally for thousands of years since paper was invented,
yeah,
from master to student, from student to, you know, who then becomes their student. And so the inheritance we get of how to fold an origami crane has been taught from one person to the next for thousands of years. And they love the thought that they could be part of that process of handing a skill from one generation to the next.
Sure. And there's also an element of water in the image too. Can we talk about that?
Yes, actually there's a lot of symbolism in there. And so the more time you spend with the piece, the more you can unpack.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Waco-based symbolism that's not very overt. The bridge is in there, the river is in there, the tornado is in there, you know, the forces of wind and water kind of underpin the whole mural. But they're very subtle and it's semi-abstract and it becomes more and more representational as you move from right to left. So it moves from a place of chaos and formation into a kind of rising, more forming image towards the left. But it's still not complete. Even the crane that is taking flight on the left-hand side is not, yet an actual bird. It's still an origami. It's still a stylized bird. So there's also a sense that it's not complete. This is a process that we in our community are going through.
Sure. I think one of my favorite things about the mural is that it says so much about Waco without literally saying the word Waco, which is the case for many of the murals that we have here. it's really nice.
It is. And it says so much about our community. And it really demands time spent with it, which I think all good art demands time and attention. And it really does that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So can you tell us about the social media component of the mural?
Absolutely. So this is an invitation for our community to become part of the messaging. So the piece is called 1,000 Hopes for Waco, because in Japanese culture, the idea of 1,000 cranes, origami cranes, is a symbol of blessing and hope for a person or a community or a special occasion. So the idea is that this is 1,000 Hopes for Waco. And so we're inviting people to either fold or obtain an origami crane and do a selfie or take a photo or have someone else take a photo of them in front of the mural and then hashtag it 1,000, the number 1,000 Hopes for Waco. And we're trying to get 1,000 posts. So the students who participated and the professional artists and all the sponsors are all participating in this. But we want to invite the wider community to make this a thing. We would love for this 1,000 Hopes for Waco to become symbolic of this point in time where we have so many hopes for this community. And we're really at this point of taking off.
That's great. So for anybody who doesn't know how to fold a paper crane, we will have instructions on our website to do that. You can also visit our blog site at creativewaco.org/blog, where we'll have more instructions about how to fold a crane and where to go to actually, hashtag it and everything. So be looking forward to that.
And it's probably worth saying, too, that there will be some paper, some origami paper made from recycled paper.
Yes.
We should say it's all very environmentally friendly, available at the surrounding businesses right by that mural.
Yes.
Many of them have very kindly offered to supply that paper on our behalf. Well, other businesses are helping us to do that. And so people can actually fold their crane right by the mural. Or if you're really stuck, you can ask one of the students who was involved to fold one for you. They all know how to.
Yep, they'll be happy to do that. They were very excited to fold all kinds of things. So we'll be sure to include a list of businesses that will have paper for you to use. Before we go, Fiona, can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the community event that we're calling the Wrap Party, which will be next week?
Absolutely. So the 28th, we will be inviting all the people who participated in that project, the funders, the sponsors, the students themselves, the professional artists, everyone who is part of that amazing project, and anyone from the community who would like to participate to have a big celebration and an official launch for the work.
Great. Fiona, thank you so much for sharing these exciting developments with the mural. The Wrap Party is scheduled from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday at the mural site. You can map to 315 University Parks Drive if you're not sure where that is. Check out our blog at creativewaco.org/blog for details about the party and to become part of the social media campaign. Let's take a break and hear a segment called David in Art with David Smith.
In many performing arts circles, the year 2018 has special meaning. This would have been the 100th birthday of Leonard Bernstein, one of the most important and celebrated musicians in American history. He was born in 1918 in Lawrence, Massachusetts, to parents who had immigrated to the United States from Jewish villages in the Ukraine in the first decade of the 20th century. This was a time when nearly 50,000 Jews were coming to America from Russian territory each year. They met and married shortly before Lenny, as the entire musical world would come to call him, was born. When he was 10, an aunt gave his family an upright piano, and from that moment he was hooked. Soon, he was playing better than his first teacher, who was quick to recognize how gifted he was. He graduated Harvard in 1939, where his senior thesis was The Absorption of Race Elements into American Music. In it, he showed how contemporary composers like Gershwin and Copland incorporated other musical styles into what they wrote, thereby making a distinctively American music. the topic pointed to his future tendency to write in various forms and styles. Through his career, he wrote symphonies, Broadway musicals, choral pieces, film scores, ballets, opera, chamber music, piano music, and more. In the 1950s, he became the first American-born principal conductor and music director of the New York Philharmonic. Orchestras all over the world have been having Bernstein celebrations this year. This month alone, organizations from Japan to Finland have staged West Side Story. Next month, you'll be able to hear music from his opera Candide performed from Knoxville, Tennessee to Leipzig, Germany. Closer to home, later this week on three successive nights, the Fort Worth Symphony is performing his Jeremiah Symphony, a program of his jazz, film, and Broadway works, and a program focusing on his vocal works. Next month, the Midland-Odessa Symphony is giving an all-Bernstein program. There's a line in Hamilton where the character of Aaron Burr sings of Alexander Hamilton, "Why do you write like you're running out of time? Write day and night like you're running out of time." And one gets the feeling, after toting up Bernstein's lifetime of conducting orchestras all around the world, undertaking educational projects at every turn, and composing in every style from classical symphonies to jazz-influenced Broadway smashes, that such a question could be asked of him, too. Bernstein would have loved Hamilton. That restlessness, that wanting to be all things at once, that inability to decide what you want to be when you grow up, and a conviction that all things are possible, is what makes Leonard Bernstein so American.
This is Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM, and I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. We're continuing today's episode with local conductor Stephen Hyde. Stephen is the Mary Franks Thompson Professor of Orchestral Activities at Baylor University. His orchestra there just received the American Prize in Orchestral Performance for the fourth year in a row, which is an incredible honor. He also serves as the music director and conductor of the Waco Symphony. Stephen, thank you for being here today.
Ray, it's a real pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
For sure. So to start things off, will you just tell me about how you began your career as a conductor?
Oh, my. When I was in high school, I was a senior and I was singing in the choir. Of course, I played in the orchestra, too. But the day of our big concert, which was a big deal in this little community I grew up with, the conductor came up sick and went to the hospital. But before on his way, he left directions that I was to conduct the concert.
Wow.
And, of course, there were three other music teachers on the staff there, but he knew that I knew the music. So I hurried home and told my dad the news, and my dad was a minister but an amateur musician and conductor. And he gave me a couple lessons about, you know, the various patterns and so forth. And that night I conducted, and they actually had broadcast that concert up to the hospital room, and it was broadcast on a local radio station. And Doc Dryden heard it in his hospital room. So that was my very first beginning of conducting.
I just want you to know that sounds like something straight out of a movie.
Well, I discovered then that I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you continued to conduct during college, and then after that, that became your profession, right?
Well, in college, I was a violin major.
Okay.
And my dream was always to play violin in the Pittsburgh Symphony. I don't know why Pittsburgh, except it was the closest orchestra there.
Yeah.
But after I graduated, then I went back to my old hometown and conducted the orchestra there for 4 years, and then went to West Virginia University for 9 years, really as an instructor of violin.
Okay.
And then I was the assistant orchestra director there. And then in 1984, Baylor was looking for a conductor, and I applied, and here I am.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm glad that we have you here in Waco.
Well, thank you.
So what draws you to conducting?
You know, it's just, first of all, it's fun to have the resources of a large group of musicians who are all on the same page and wanting to make music together, and to give that downbeat and to feel and to hear the sound that comes back at you is just riveting. Of course, I think the other aspect of it is that you're driving the boat. So as a player, you sit there and you're kind of almost kidnapped by what the person up front who's wielding the baton thinks about the piece. But when it's your opportunity, then you get to interpret the piece as you've studied it and as you believe it should be interpreted. And that's really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Can we talk about that idea of interpretation? You know, it may seem to those of us who have never done conducting, or even those of us who don't play an instrument, that it would just be a matter of everybody has the same sheet of music, we're all reading it, and so that's telling us how everything should sound. Where do you as a conductor come in to kind of change how that works?
Well, it's a very good question. You know, if it was just so simple that there was one tempo for a piece, you know, but most composers do things in generalities. They'll say allegro, which is fast. Well, how fast is fast?
Okay.
Maybe I hear it a little slower than the next person and feels it's a little faster. So you start with that. But the real art of conducting is then changing tempos. So when you approach a time, maybe harmonically or in the architecture of the music, where you think it would really benefit from a little stretching out, a little slowing down to really create a moment right at a very important juncture in the music, that's where the conductor is important. Otherwise, we could just put headphones on the orchestra and have a click track and have them play.
Yeah.
But what happens when you do that is a rather mechanical version of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's really wonderful, all these great pieces, old pieces, new pieces, can be interpreted in millions of different ways.
Yeah.
And it's what your idea of the piece is. Certainly the dynamics are on the page, but there again, you direct that, I want this to come out a little bit, everybody else a little bit less here, so you're balancing the orchestra. But also the changing of the rather regularity of the tempo is really where the art exists.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. That's incredible. So musicians, of course, practice pieces on their own before a concert.
They better.
You would hope that they would. So what does behind-the-scenes preparation look like for a conductor?
Again, another excellent question. We're spend hours and hours and hours studying our score. And the score is every single note that the players have on their individual parts are put onto the score. So at the very top, you're going to have the flutes, and at the very bottom of the score, you're going to have the double basses. But you have to know what everybody's playing all the way through. And then you have to make certain conclusions about that. Where are the phrases? How do you want to structure the phrase? Where is the rise and fall of the music? But you also have to understand who's playing what when.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that is just takes hours and hours and hours. And it's fun because you're hearing all this great music in your head. But the first time you step up and it actually comes into physical notes and sounds, it's revelatory. And sometimes you think, boy, what I was thinking is not going to work. Or sometimes you think, boy, that really worked great.
Yeah.
But it's all those hours of trying to master each of the parts. And at minimum, those would be about 23 parts, individual parts.
Wow.
That go into a symphony.
That's incredible. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. So I imagine the feeling of conducting an ensemble, you kind of touched on this, that it's just, it's unlike any sort of other experience in music. Can you describe what a performance feels like for you?
Well, I think it's kind of the same as for a musician, especially if you're playing a solo. You know, there's a little bit of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You're a little bit nervous, but that nerves you try to use to your advantage because it gives excitement and kind of, you know, you wake up with the opportunity that you have. And so you're trying to, right before you go out to conduct, you're reviewing your mind, the tempi of the various movements that you want to initiate. In some regard, it'd be easy if you could just kind of have a metronome out there and say, yeah, here's the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not kosher.
Yeah.
So you're trying to review what you're trying to do with each of the pieces and who you're going to encourage and who is primary and who is secondary or tertiary in the music. And so you're reviewing all that. If it's a soloist, you're trying to remember the liberties that they took with the piece. Where did they take some time? Where did they want it slowed down a little bit? Where are the spots in the piece where they really ask you to move ahead and move the tempo for their comfort or for their musical wishes? So you're trying to review all those things too. Of course, with a soloist, their interpretation is more important than the conductor's. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to really make sure that their musical concept is what comes through primarily. And also the balance is so important. You got one against many. And so you have to make sure that the soloist is always going to be in a position that can be heard well.
Sure. Do you think that, just in terms of rising musicians, especially when you're working with university-level students, do you think that a conductor really has the ability to push a good student even further? Or do you think that a musician's talent is going to shine regardless?
No, I think we're part of the process. What you're trying to do is to take a team, because an orchestra, after all, is a big team. And you're trying to capitalize on all the individual talents and abilities of a big team and collectively make something that's bigger than the sum of its parts. People don't realize this, but, an orchestra, again, as I mentioned, this team aspect of it, you're talking about a basketball team, and I love basketball, but you're trying to get five people to work intricately and run plays together. With an orchestra, we have to have 100, and none of them sit on the bench. They're all starters. Yeah. And they all have to be on the same page and tuned in to what the conductor's asking and tuned into their colleagues, so they're playing with them and in tune and so forth. And it's a wonderful demonstration of the joys of collective music making, and it's very, very special. It can be enormously rewarding, and sometimes I'm inspired by what the musicians do, and sometimes in the middle of something I say, boy, there's a little solo here in the oboe, and they're playing it so beautifully, and they're moving ahead. Let me take that, and now when the whole orchestra comes in, do the same thing. So, that it's a give and take, and no performance is ever the same.
Yeah, wow. So are there any roles that a conductor serves beyond, the obvious of keeping the ensemble together that may not be very clear to us as the public?
Well, I think for sure with both of my orchestras, the Baylor Symphony and the Waco Symphony, we have certain judgments to make. Who is eligible to be a part of the ensemble? And that's a part that's not always fun, because frequently people want to be involved, but you know that actually they won't contribute to the ensemble, but they will in some ways deter it and not make a positive contribution. So the aspect of choosing the orchestra is very important. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, you try to find ways in which you put all that aggregate group of people together in positive ways. Sometimes certain people sound good together. If it's a solo, one of the solo instruments, the flute and the oboe sound really good. So use that pair together on that piece. In other cases, even that people don't play well together on one stand. So it might be two string players who best to keep them apart.
Yeah.
But more than that, you're trying always to call them to a higher level. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our responsibility, is they can do a certain amount of things and, frankly, quite amazing things without a conductor. One of my favorite things to do sometimes with the Waco Symphony is just put my hands down and let the audience hear how they relate to each other and how they're able to play just fine without me.
Yeah.
But then my goal and my responsibility is to take them beyond what they could do without me.
Yeah. So the Baylor Symphony Orchestra, under your leadership, has just won the American Prize in Orchestral Performance in the University Division. And this is the fourth year in a row that that's happened, which is really important for more than one reason. Can you tell us about the significance?
Well, the administrator of the American Prize, and this is a prize that's a national prize, the administrator told me they've never had any other entrant, either an ensemble, a choir, a band, an orchestra, a chamber orchestra, whatever, or individual entrants, you know, a solo singer or something of that nature. They've never had any entry win four times in a row.
So that's incredible.
He used the word unprecedented. Wow. So I'm pleased about that. The motto of the Baylor Symphony is integrity with humility. Mm-hmm. So we don't brag about it. We're just very grateful for the efforts of the players. We're grateful for the faculty who recruit these very talented people from all over the country and then bring them in and develop and nurture them, but also for the kinds of cooperation that's required to get them to play together, sublimating perhaps their own desires and in some cases knowing that they have to work really hard to achieve the balance and the level that we want them to do. So it's just kind of a verification of what we're doing, and it feels good to know that somebody else has adjudicated that positively and saying. And again, it's interesting to see the groups that we have placed first and those that have placed beneath us. And in every case, it's some pretty big name conservatory groups. So that's very satisfying. But again, with great thanks to the players and the faculty and the great team that brings the music to life.
You know, I love what you said earlier, Stephen, about the orchestra being like a team. I'm pretty sure that if there were any other team in our community that had won the national championships 4 years in a row, we would be hearing about that a lot. And and I really think, I know humility is one of your values, so I want to jump in there and just say this is something our community should be immensely proud of.
Thank you,
fantastic
Fiona.
Achievement.
I appreciate it very much. It's a school-wide endeavor.
Stephen, thank you so much for your time today. Congratulations on the American Prize win. You can check out the Baylor School of Music website for a full calendar of performances throughout the next year. You can also access those events on the Waco app, which can be downloaded from the Apple and Android stores. If you just search for Waco, Texas, it should come right up. This episode will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of my chat with Stephen. Catch the next episode of Conversations with Creative Waco on Friday, August 31st at 11:30 a.m. and again at 8 p.m. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.